Yeah, I mean, where else are you going to see Jeffrey Combs with a penis growing out of the middle of his head?
It's a pineal gland. A pineal. It's not
it's
a penis.
It's a penis. It's got a big head and a long shaft. It's a penis.
Radio Drone.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Drone, living in Trump's America. Who knows how long this will last. But
oh, stop it.
But this week, we're going to travel back in time to 1986. I am Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is Cecil Always Wrong.
No, you're wrong.
And Peter giggling from a country that doesn't have to deal with Trump.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Naga, can we stop politicizing everything?
Can we just stay in 1986 so we can stop with the Trump bullshit and just live in a year? It's got some really good movies.
No, that was Ronald Reagan then.
Well, whatever.
All right, well, we'll talk about 1986 in a minute. In the meantime, what you freaks need to do is go get your freak on. You go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, D-R-O-M-E, and you will get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, a power O-ring, and free U.S. shipping. Just use the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. As I said, we're talking about 1986. We've gotten a lot of people that really like these year retrospectives, so we're getting back to this for a little while. 1986, what's your takeaway movie from this year?
Howard the Duck.
Of course.
No, I like Howard, but I'd probably have to go with Aliens. Aliens is just a phenomenal movie. I mean, every edition that's come out of that is good, where the original theatrical version and then the extended cut with the auto guns in the hallway, Ripley finding out that her daughter outlived her, more or less. Just such an incredible movie. I mean, the special effects were on, the pacing was perfect. It's just one of those like iconic films where they took the concepts and everything that was created with the original and expanded upon it and made it a much bigger universe. That's really hard to do with sequels. A lot of times sequels are just kind of continuations of what was already there. But this, they made it so much bigger and they showed more, they had the hives and they the queen alien and so many amazing things in that. Just a freaking incredible movie that it's tough because the original Alien is so good and then Aliens is just awesome. I mean, it's hard to say because they're both good in completely different ways. So it's hard to say with that series, which one is the better of the two, but those are definitely the high watermarks of the series is 1 and 2.
I don't have one. I can't pick one. I'm going to pick 3, and they're 3 movies that pretty much shaped my childhood as a movie fan. We got Transformers, the animated movie, which I was f***ing obsessed with, that I would watch repeatedly on VHS. There's that, and there's Highlander, which I was also obsessed with. That was another repeat viewing VHS movie. And of course, Big Trouble in Little China. Those were my 3 obsessive, like, childhood movies that I loved from this exact year. And I think that really helped to shape my childhood. There's so many other ones, like 86 is a great fucking year, but those 3, I think were probably, like, they were the earliest memories I have of just like watching really, really fun movies that I would go on to still love to this day. Like Highlander became such an obsession for me, with the TV show and the other sequels and everything, and Big Trouble in Little China helping me to get into like more of John Carpenter's movies, and the animated Transformers movie was just still to me to this day one of the coolest animated films ever. So that holy trinity for me, I think would define 1986 as a movie year.
See, I was gonna go with Aliens, but Cecil stole that from me. So I'm gonna go with, this was the year of Charles Band's The Eliminators.
Mm.
Basically, the exploitation version of the X-Men. The guy, the cyborg with the tank tread legs, and you've got a ninja, and then you got the swashbuckling smuggler, and then you got the scientist, and Eliminators is such a fantastic movie, and you got time travel and inner dimensions and giant robots, and Eliminators, I remember the first time I saw the commercial for this on MTV, and I was like, I have to see this movie. And then it didn't come theatrically near me at all. So when I saw that on video, I don't care if the movie didn't quite live up to my 11-year-old expectations. Eliminators is a fantastic movie, and I watched it again on DVD about 2 years ago, and it's still really damn cool. So I'm taking Eliminators since Cecil stole Aliens from me. So, 1986, this is the first year, as Peter had established when we were talking about the 70s and the early 80s, it takes a while for a decade to kind of transition over into the pop culture. This is the first year where I think the 80s really started to cement themselves as the 80s. 1986 is a very 80s year. There are a lot of movies, both in the sci-fi and horror genres, as well as mainstream films, dramas, action movies, that are quintessentially 80s movies. And I think you really see that here. Non-sci-fi, non-horror, what 1986 films do you remember that are non-genre related?
The closest might be Manhunter, because that one, I mean, it's a horror, but it's more of like a thriller, and it's the first time we get to see Hannibal Lecter on the big screen, and he's played brilliantly, in my opinion, by Brian Cox. I feel like it was a little more subtle and more subdued and more realistic than Anthony Hopkins, more kind of, he was great, but it was more kind of cartoonish. I love that one. That's got a great Tangerine Dream soundtrack. That was when Michael Mann really had that 1980s aesthetic, lots of neon, lots of shadow. Manhunter would probably be the one I would take out of that year as the non sort of genre confined one, and more of like a legit awesome thriller, crime thriller kind of thing with some horror elements here and there, but definitely the more serious one that I can remember. And it's just a fantastic movie, just all around one of my favorites when it comes to like the crime thriller kind of stuff.
I'd probably have to go with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I have always had a soft spot for that. It's funny. It's clever. Really shows how dumb I was when I watched it. I didn't know when he gets up and starts singing Twist and Shout. I didn't know who the hell I knew who the Beatles were, but I just assumed that was Ferris Bueller's song. And later found out that it was the Beatles twist, and he was lip syncing it. And I'm like, huh?
Well, but Ferris Bueller as a character is so narcissistic and self-absorbed, he probably thinks it's his.
Right. You know, it started my love of Mia Sara. It's genuinely funny, and it's one of those few comedies that I feel, still stands up. You know, you can watch it and enjoy it, because while there is some dated humor in it, for the most part, the themes there are still relevant today. So I genuinely love the movie.
And see, I'm going to go with a movie I've always loved. I love Better Off Dead, but I actually think I like One Crazy Summer just a little bit more.
Mm.
I think One Crazy Summer is funnier. It has, up to this point, the most brilliant riff on Godzilla I've ever seen. I think Demi Moore is actually good in it. John Cusack is fantastic, especially when you find out the behind the scenes where he hated the making of this movie and got into such a fight with Savage Steve Hyland. And John Cusack wouldn't even attend the premiere of the film, and you see how great a performance he gives in this. I think Mark Metcalf steals this movie as that sadistic, literally mustache twirling villain. I think One Crazy Summer would be my non-genre pick.
No, I love One Crazy Summer.
I haven't seen it.
You've never seen One Crazy Summer?
Never seen One Crazy Summer.
Oh, it's really good. It's so.
It's a movie that knows it's a movie to a degree, but it doesn't, it is still played straight. Am I right there, Cecil, kinda?
Yeah, it's a pretty accurate way of describing it, cause it's all, like, if Leslie Nielsen was in this movie, it probably would have fit as well, you know, because there's all kinds of absurdity going on around the characters, but then they're playing it completely straight, and that's what really makes it funny.
I mean, there's a movie within this movie that's being shot in Nantucket Bay. It's called Foam 2. It's about a giant radioactive dolphin with rabies terrorizing a small town. They're shooting that movie in the continuity of this movie. That's, if that funny. Doesn't sell you, I don't know what does.
That sounds great. I'll definitely be checking this one out.
But like I said, this was a very quintessentially 80s year. You've got movies that really could have only happened in the 80s here. Like something like Michael Mann's Band of the Hand. That's a pretty damn 80s movie. As Peter pointed out, Manhunter is a pretty damn 80s movie. You've got Blue City, the Care Bears movie, which is pretty damn 80s. Choke Canyon from Avidaito Asinitis. Cobra. Cobra and Club Paradise are absolutely 80s films. Crocodile Dundee could have only happened in 1986. Delta Force? Very, very 80s. The Fly remake? It's a pretty 80s movie. All right, Cecil, here you go. Rad could only have happened in 86.
Rad absolutely could only have happened in 86, or 80s in general. It's so quintessentially 80s. I mean, ugh, just everything about that movie just oozes the 80s.
I mean, we had My Little Pony the movie this year. That could have only happened, that version could have only happened in 86. Robotech the movie. That was pretty 80s. She's Gotta Have It by Spike Lee. Yeah, pretty damn 80s. Soul Man? Offensively, yes, only the 80s could have given us Soul Man. Terror Vision. It's genre, but yeah, Terror Vision, it's about satellite TV. In today's market, would someone who was born in the 2000s even get Terror Vision at this point?
Most likely not, no.
You know, we had Transformers the movie, Trick or Treat, the Mark Price Halloween one. Just the hairstyles alone are almost Rad levels of 1986. Cecil will love this one, The Wraith. Very 86.
Hell yes.
Oh, The Wraith is awesome.
The Wraith is just amazing. How can you not love The Wraith?
Before we get into the genre films, let's look at some of the good and bad non-genre films that came out this year. You've got Hal Ashby's fantastic 8 Million Ways to Die, as well as the John Frankenheimer 52 Pickup that came out this year. Two great crime thrillers.
I believe I saw 52 Pickup, that was Roy Scheider?
Yep.
Yes.
And Vanity.
And Vanity, that's right, and Vanity. I think when Vanity was starting her coke days. I saw it so long ago.
Well, we also had Armed and Dangerous, the John Candy, Eugene Levy movie that is way better as a trailer. I think the trailer is a fantastic movie. The actual movie, they used all the funny bits in the trailer. I was so disappointed with Armed and Dangerous.
Because I'd watch pretty much anything with like John Candy in it and Eugene Levy's funny, but I don't really remember it. I think I may have just been too young to remember anything really from it. I was probably maybe 10 or 11 years old. But yeah, I've seen it. Nothing really memorable about it, I guess. Nothing memorable enough to remember or any desire to watch it again. So that might say something.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it in a while, but I do remember Armed and Dangerous. I remember the, was it, he's shooting at Eddie Murphy and he's like, dance! And he starts doing a moonwalk.
Eddie Murphy's not in that movie.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm thinking, oh, no, Armed and Dangerous was
You're thinking of Best Defense.
I'm thinking of Best Defense. Armed and Dangerous was John Candy.
John Candy, Eugene Levy, and Meg Ryan.
I like Armed and Dangerous. That was funny. I mean, it wasn't like laugh out loud, constantly funny, but I thought overall it had a lot of funny bits. They did, of course, show the best comedy in the trailer, but I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was that bad. I like it.
Personally, no, I haven't seen the movie in about 10 years, but I remember Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield being really funny.
Oh yeah, Back to School is, again, that's one, it is a little bit dated, but it's got
Oingo,
so much.
He gets Oingo Boingo to play his pool party.
He does get Oingo Boingo to play his pool party. But, I mean, you've got, a young-ish Sally Kellerman. Sam Kinison he was the history teacher, I think.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it was like, you know, like sometimes you'll watch a movie and they'll have the actor in there, but they're trying to act. It was basically, you know, they hired Sam Kinison to be Sam Kinison. the one chick from Star Trek is in it, whose name is escaping me.
Robert Downey Jr., Ned Beatty, Burt Young, Adrian Barbeau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kurt Vonnegut plays himself in Kurt a self-deprecating role. Yeah,
cancel his check. Like, but I mean, you got the Triple Lindy, you know, is from there. I mean, that movie is very, very referenced. And another movie that has Twist and Shout in it. Although that one you had Rodney Dangerfield singing it. Yeah, it's that is a genuinely funny movie that, it, like I said, there's a little bit here and there that's dated. If I'm not mistaken, was that R or was that PG-13?
PG-13.
PG-13.
That was still in the days when PG-13 could push a lot, too.
Because, yeah, they had the scene where he's he's looking for his son, and he's walking through, and he thinks he's in the boys' locker room, and he's in the girls' locker room, and he opens the shower, and he sees the one girl, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see anything, and he closes it, and then he opens again, and he's like, by the way, you're perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, man, just really, really funny movie.
Yeah, that one's fun. It's been a little while since I've seen it, but I do find that one enjoyable. You know, I love Rodney Dangerfield, and it had a lot of really good actors, early performances from Robert Downey Jr. and stuff like that. It's pretty good. Like, it's not one of those ones I would dub as like an amazing movie, just because it's been such a long time since I've seen it. Not really one of those I go back to pretty often, but yeah, it was good.
Well, and then we've got another severely dated movie. Some people, I've seen this called a genre film. It really isn't. Have either of you seen the not John Carpenter, even though his name is above the title, Black Moon Rising with Tommy Lee Jones and Linda Hamilton and the just passed Robert Vaughn?
Long time ago. I just remember it being like a little more science fiction-y. And I think I watched it because I was on a Linda Hamilton kick, because after seeing her in Terminator, I was like, yeah, let me check this out. And I don't remember enjoying it very much, but it's been a very long time.
Basically, Tommy Lee Jones has to steal a supercar, you know, basically like a kit from Linda Hamilton, who steals it from him, and he's got to steal it back because she works for a big smuggling ring led by Robert Vaughn. And then Hightower from Police Academy gets involved, and it's called John Carpenter's Black Moon Rising, when he had absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with it other than pitching them an idea about Vietnam vets that start having nightmares, and they literally changed everything. He says there's not one word of his script in that movie, but because they bought the title from him, they put his name above the title. So it's John Carpenter's Black Moon Rising.
I'm on the IMDb. I'm on the IMDb right now, and the director is like Harley Kokelis, and it says writers was John Carpenter and screenplay was Carpenter. So I guess like they just credited that to get the name and just changed everything for themselves.
Carpenter's very open. This has nothing to do with him.
The plot doesn't seem very Carpenter-esque, I don't think.
I mean, it's not a bad movie. It's fun watching Tommy Lee Jones spar with Linda Hamilton, although their sex scene is a little awkward because those two don't really mesh personality-wise.
No, not
but
really.
Fine. But then you have the movie I can't enjoy anymore because the guy's a fucking child molester, but, you know, you've got Choke Canyon, starring now child molester Stephen Collins, which makes me not able to enjoy Choke Canyon, a movie I really did enjoy, with Lance Henriksen as a villain. And either of you seen Choke Canyon, even though it stars a freaking child molester?
Who was the child molester? Stephen Collins?
Stephen Collins from Star Trek The Motion Picture and
Tales
of the Gold Monkey and that. He diddled his 12-year-old daughter.
From Seventh Heaven.
Yeah.
Two movies in 86 now with f***ing child molesters. The principal from Ferris Bueller's Day Off was a child diddler too. Or child porn, caught for child porn or some shit.
No, he was actually caught with underage male prostitutes.
Oh, okay, so that's even worse.
Yeah.
What the f***? I've never seen Choke Canyon though. I just IMDb'd it though, and looks like it's got kind of a Cannonball Run vibe to it. Never seen it though, no.
No, I've never seen Show Canyon, surprisingly enough. As far as, like, I don't know, movies where, like, I think I have an easier time separating a movie where there's, like, an actor in it versus, like, something like Victor Silva, where, you know, he directed it. So it's still, you know, and he was, you know, he's another one who got busted for molesting the, 12 or 13-year-old kid during Dolly Dearest.
Oh, God.
During Clown House, and he videotaped it all.
Clown House, Clown House. Yeah, because Dolly Dearest was, I think, well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
In the case of Victor Silva, he's out of prison, and then every movie he makes is full of shirtless teenage boys in their underwear. And you're like, really? Really, Victor?
And, well, he gets out of prison, and who hires him? Disney.
Disney for Powder, yeah.
Yeah. That, I'm like, cause I have so many people asking me to do, Jeepers Creepers. And even though I like Jeepers Creepers, I just can't, like, it's like, look, if I talk about it, I'm gonna have to talk about the 400-pound gorilla. I don't wanna, you know? So I'd rather just not do it.
Well, you could always get someone like the Cobra on them. I love Stallone's Cobra. It is such a ridiculously over the top. And I mean, I watched it again just about 3 months ago. It's a stupid movie. The characters all act stupid. It's a stupid plot, but I love Cobra.
Hell yeah. Cobra is amazing. I mean, that was, like Stallone, his ego was just at an all time high. It's ridiculous. There's so many just gunfights. The absurdity of it. He cuts his pizza with scissors. Yeah. It's ridiculous. I really, really enjoy Cobra.
The Cobra ain't gonna live by society's rules, man.
Yeah, I mean, driving around in that frickin' submarine on wheels.
That had fucking nitro. It could go like super fast.
Exactly.
Like, that's not even the type of car that like fits that sort of thing. Like, I don't even know if that would fucking work.
Nitrous in a freaking, what is supposed to be a cop car, you know?
Yeah.
It almost comes out like either satire or parody, but it's not.
You listen to the commentary. They meant this totally straight, man.
Oh, they did. But the thing is too, that was kind of how things were, you know,
That's a very 80s movie.
It's the very 80s movie. They wanted the you know, tough as balls, cop who just shot everybody and, it's just wonderful.
I think it's no surprise to anybody that I model my life after Cobra 1986.
Marion Cobretti.
That's right, directed by George P. Cosmatos, starring Sylvester Stallone, music by Sylvester LeVay. Brian Thompson is the psychotic Arnold Schwarzenegger clone, Michael Myers villain. It's just such a fucking retarded movie. He keeps his gun right where his crotch is, and there's a cobra on the handle, and the fucking catchphrases, and the action, and the synthy music, and the fight at the end in the steel mill, which just has so many homoerotic connotations. It's just such a fantastic 80s movie that you could not make today, unironically. I think this is a movie that you genuinely would have to make to pull it off, to make it work the way it did. And to make it today, you would have, they would totally do it like, it's funny how he's wearing the shades at night and he's got the tight pants. No, you have to make this in the 80s and you have to make it genuinely with all the steroids and cocaine that were fueling it. This is just such a perfectly retarded 80s alpha male action movie and I love it.
The weird thing about Cobra is this is what Stallone wanted to do for Beverly Hills Cop. When he left the Beverly Hills Cop project, I don't know all of it because Cobra's partially based on a novel. He took, according to Martin Brest on the Beverly Hills Cop commentary, many of his ideas he took from his Beverly Hills Cop rewrites and used them in Cobra. Think of Cobra as kind of what we almost had for Beverly Hills Cop. If you didn't live in 1986, you guys probably don't remember. There was this little brief period from about 86 to 88 where Americans were just obsessed with the Australians. That's the only time period Crocodile Dundee could have existed in. I'm not going to talk about the sequel because we'll deal with that when we get down the line, but I enjoyed Crocodile Dundee. I really did. It's a really, really 80s movie though. I saw it again about a year ago and I was I had forgotten just how 1986 this movie was.
Crocodile Dundee is fun. It's dumb. It completely plays to like the Australian stereotypes. Paul Hogan is a lot of fun as a leading guy. It's one of those movies I revisit every couple of years. Actually, I should probably watch it with Charlotte at some point so I can make fun of it for its Australian-ness right in front of her nose. That would be pretty fun. But yeah, I like it. I think it's just one of those sort of fun 80s action comedy enjoyable kind of movies. Like, it's totally tailor fit for its time, and that's all it needs to be.
Well, that started America's love affair with Australia. We had that. We had Foster's. We had Yahoo Serious. It was a thing. I mean, everybody loved Australia there for a little while. You know, the whole put a shrimp on the Barbie and all that stuff. And it was fun. It's a sweet movie. It's got a lot of funny moments in it. That's not a knife. That's a knife. It's got so many really classic lines that I think a lot of people don't realize at this point, even where it came from. So. Yeah. I've always liked Crocodile Dundee. It is a little cheesy, especially by today's standards, but it's still well done and a fun movie.
We also got the kick-ass and criminally overlooked Gary Busey revenge flick Eye of the Tiger in 1986.
Oh, God damn it.
Have you seen that one, I'm guessing,
yes,
Peter?
Yes, I have. I have it on a four movie box set with Exterminator
2. That was the first time it was ever released on DVD, so yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, the first time I saw this movie was when I picked up the box set, and I'm so, so extraordinarily happy that I own this movie because it's one of my favorite, so bad that it's good movies, to put on when I just feel like watching something stupid or when I have people over. Like, it's such a fun movie to introduce to people. The film begins with and this sets the pace for the whole goddamn thing, is you have Eye of the Tiger playing the song Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, as we have a crotch level zoom up of Gary Busey and this other inmate as they're getting out of prison doing up their pants and adjusting their crotches, set to Eye of the Tiger. This is the opening of this film. There you have it. And the rest of the movie, you've got Gary Busey, who somehow has this weird, like, it's not quite spider sense, it's Gary Busey sense that he picked up from fighting in the war and from being in prison, where he can sense that danger is coming from, he could be anywhere and he'll sense that something is happening. Like, there's a woman is being raped, so he storms off into his truck and finds her about to be raped by a gang of motorcycle rapists, I guess. Those are kind of the bad guys of the movie. Then Gary Busey gets put in the hospital at some point and he stays there for like 35, 40 minutes. It's a really weirdly and oddly paced film, and it's hard to really put your thumb on it, but Gary Busey actually, it says something really, the funniest part of this movie is not the funniest part of the movie itself, but the synopsis for it in itself is hilarious, because the way it describes Gary Busey's character, a former ex-Vietnam veteran. What the hell does that mean? How could you be a former ex-Nom vet? Like, what? That just
because
that
he was
alone.
An ex-Nom vet and now he's an ex-ex-Nom vet.
Yes, I guess going to prison does that. Like, I don't know. It's such a bizarre movie, but I love it.
The four pack that it's on. So I should, I will definitely be bumping that up in the movies I need to watch.
It's the best documentary about Gary Busey's life, next to Hyder in the House. We've got a camera and we're following Gary Busey around the neighborhood.
Also, I would say it's the most realistic portrayal of the PTSD suffered by Nam vets.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it gives them like a spider sense for violence.
But then you also had great films like Hamburger the Motion Picture with Dick Butkus that came out that year that no one remembers, rightfully so. You had the movie Hoosiers that everyone loves, unless you're like, you know, Cecil and Peter and I don't care about sports ball. You've got Iron Eagle, one of the most ridiculous military movies ever made. You've got the movie that pissed
me
off.
Gloss over Iron Eagle. What's the matter with you? Iron Eagle is like another like so 80s movie. Kid steals a freaking jet
80s.
From the military and he goes and to a Twisted Sister song and goes and beats the shit out of Iraq or Iran.
Actually, at that point, it might have been Libya.
Libya? Okay. Beats the shit out of, some place where there's deserts and oil, rescues his father and Lou Gossett Jr.'s in it. Ah, come on. Iron Eagle's outstanding.
And they made four of those.
Iron Eagle is the better Top Gun. That's the way I've always seen it.
Yes.
I'll give you that, yes. You had the movie that I thought was going to be a comedy. JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling, starring Richard Pryor about his life and how it led him to blowing himself up and setting himself on fire. I was like, Richard Pryor's in a new movie, and I'm finally old enough to see one of these in the theater. And it's like, wow, that's not the movie I thought I was getting. Either of you seen JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling?
No, I don't think so. Doesn't sound too familiar.
It is one of the few Richard Pryor movies that I have not seen.
Probably because it's one of the few that's not a freaking comedy.
Yeah, I mean, I just picked up Silver Streak the other day.
Not Tom Hanks' debut, but the very first time Tom Hanks ever got a starring credit in The Money Pit is not a good movie, but has amazing set pieces. There are little 5-minute chunks in this 90-minute movie that are just brilliant and laugh-out-loud funny, and you have to sit through 20 minutes of crap to get to the next one of those. Mm. So The Money Pit, I recommend just watching the best ofs on YouTube.
It was the remake of Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, and yeah, I'm with you. The set pieces in it were very good, and it's okay, but it's definitely better than Ice Cube movie. Is it Are We Done Yet? Was the remake of, you know, yeah, that stunk. But at least this was all right.
We had Charles Bronson playing Charles Bronson again in Murphy's Law. Basically, he's playing Paul Kersey again, as he plays Paul Kersey in all of his 80s canon films. Oh, so dated Deborah Foreman film My Chauffeur with Sam Jones. That's another 80s to hell movie. Cecil, I know you'll back me up on that one.
My sister, that was one of her favorite movies, and she would hog
it. It's so 80s, though, isn't it?
Oh, my God, is it so 80s. She used to hog the VHS player and would just play that just nonstop. And I can't tell you if it is a good movie or not because I hate it because she just played it so much through no fault of the movie. It's just, you can only watch, you know, Deborah Foreman dealing with that, that douchebag British guy in the beginning so many times before you start to like look for things to hit yourself with.
I don't have much to say about that one, but I really liked Murphy's Law.
Well, Murphy's Law was a good film, but it was another Death Wish movie that just wasn't called Death Wish.
Which there's nothing wrong with. I could watch those all day.
You had The Name of the Rose, the movie where Christian Slater is in ye olde England and doesn't even pretend to put on an accent. I mean, at least Sean Connery, you know, Scottish, he's an English investigator in ye olde England. All right, fine. Christian Slater doesn't even try, and that's what I love about Name of the Rose. Oh, and Ron Perlman whipping himself to make the pain go away is great, too.
A long time ago, and didn't they make Christian Slater have that really bad monk haircut?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that's really the thing that kind of sticks out. And wasn't there, there was some like really out of place nudity in it too, wasn't there?
There's a couple of brutal rapes in the movie, and this is by monks.
Yeah, it's
one of those movies, Peter.
It's monk-sploitation.
Well, and then you had like Oliver Stone's Oscar-winning Platoon, which is a fantastic movie.
Yes. It's by far one of the best Vietnam War era stories ever. Like, to me, it's that and Full Metal Jacket are two of my favorites when it comes to like...
That's cause Platoon's almost autobiographical. Basically, yeah. Charlie Sheen's character is Oliver Stone.
It's an amazing movie. Like it's one of the best, like actual, like, I mean, there are the goofy ones, obviously, like,
Exterminator,
random Exterminator and all those other weird, like exploitation ones. But like Platoon is just up there as like just one of the most amazing war movies ever made. And it really gets heavy. God, Bryce, who plays Sergeant Barnes again? That's, his name.
Tom Berenger or Willem Dafoe?
Tom Berenger. His whole speech in their little bunker when they're all, you know, smoking dope and shit. And he comes down with like the bottle of Jack and just like, you come down here, you smoke this shit to escape reality. I am reality and all this stuff. It's like, it's so good. Like every moment is just so, it's a heavy, heavy film.
I actually thought Kevin Dillon stole this movie as just the complete psychopath soldier that Johnny Depp is trying to be the opposite of.
Holy shit, you ever seen a head come apart like that?
Never see brains like that, man.
Yeah, he steals the movie and he's only in it for like 20 minutes.
He's a psycho and he gets it good at the end too. He gets stabbed to death by Viet Cong. But that's just an awesome, awesome movie. One of those ones I'll watch like maybe once every 1 or 2 years just cause it leaves you with such a heavy feeling by the end of it. And I think there's another movie we're going to talk to that leaves you with the similar sort of feeling that also came out in 1986 when we get a little bit more into horror.
Well, I'm gonna breeze through these next ones because I want to get to the genre ones. But we've got Schwarzenegger in Raw Deal, where he infiltrates the mob in one of the least convincing ways possible, but it's still awesome. Well, and then we've got the surprisingly deep movie, no pun intended, River's Edge. You've got Running Scared, which a movie that it shouldn't, Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal shouldn't be able to carry an action movie, but until the last 15 minutes where the movie shits the bed, Running Scared's a great movie.
River's Edge, I think we should highlight a little bit because I think that's one that does fly over a lot of people's radar, and it's a really great little lesser known movie with Crispin Glover and Keanu
Daniel
Reed.
Roebuck actually steals that from, because he spends most of his screen time with Dennis Hopper. Daniel Roebuck steals the movie from Dennis freaking Hopper.
Oh, yeah. And they're all like pretty much, they're all metalheads and it's a great look into like 80s.
It's got a Slayer soundtrack, for God's sake.
Awesome soundtrack. This movie is one I would really recommend to people who want to see like Crispin Glover in something other than like Back to the Future in Friday the 13th Part 4. And
Crispin Glover is pretty nuts in this movie. He's
great though.
He's on a different planet with his performance. I will
he's
give
really
him that.
He's really fun though. He's really great. And I think it's a great little look into like 1980s metal culture. Cause I think in the 80s, we saw a lot of like, you know, the synth pop kind of culture and, you know, the more the pop, the dancey kind of stuff. Whereas this actually shows you like metalheads and stuff, which I thought was really cool and really different. It had a great heavy metal, thrash metal soundtrack, a lot of Slayer and stuff. So I think that's one we should highlight and recommend to people. people, because I only just heard about this movie in the last year or so, and I was blown away by it.
Have you seen River's Edge, Cecil?
I don't think so. I thought I did, but none of this sounds familiar.
Keanu Reeves, where Daniel Roebuck kills his girlfriend and then is just kind of eh, and then Crispin Glover and Keanu Reeves help him cover it up, and they help him hide out with Dennis Hopper, who grows his own pot in his apartment and is in love with his blow-up doll.
No, but
am I wrong? Am I, Peter?
No, that's the movie, and they're all leather jacket wearing metalheads that listen to Slayer.
Oh, and it's also a true story too.
And it's right. Really good.
And then like Running Scared, I think is a fantastic movie until the big shootout empty mall at the end. It becomes a totally different film. The last 15 minutes of Running Scared feel like test audience reshoots to me, but yeah. Otherwise I love that movie. Salvador from Oliver Stone, amazing film. You got Short Circuit, which I've never really been a fan of. Sid and Nancy. I used to like the movie until I actually found out about the real Sid Vicious and then saw that movie is a cartoon version of Sid Vicious. Soul Man. Even C. Thomas Howell said that movie is so racist and he'd never do that looking back at it. That's a terribly racist movie.
No, I think culture nowadays, you know, people, especially the young demographic would really eat that movie up. I think it deserves a re-release. I think it should be re-released worldwide. I think people would really, really accept it. Absolutely.
Okay, let me just put it into this perspective. If that's racist, then so is White Chicks.
White Chicks is totally racist.
But White Chicks is getting a sequel, and White Chicks is not getting a fraction of the shit that it would if they, like, compared to if they re-released Soul Man today.
But Soul Man's also based on a true story. It really happened.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that.
Oh, fuck.
Yes, Soul Man's a true story, you dipshit.
All right, but I mean, but even still, the whole thing is it's like, I don't subscribe to the, you know, one is racist and one isn't. It's like, it's either, but the thing is, as far as I'm concerned, they both have every right to exist.
You had Stand By Me, a film that, it's a good film, it's not one of my favorites. You have Three Amigos, which,
Stand By
again,
Me is great.
Yeah. I think it has its moments, but I don't like the whole thing. You have Top Gun, which is just a 2-hour long recruitment for the Navy film.
No, you're wrong. No, it's not that. It is the filler scenes in a gay porno without the actual gay porn.
I was going to say it's more.
That's fair.
It's more of a recruitment for gays than it is the military.
What about militaries in the gay? You know, don't ask.
There
I
you
won't
go.
Tell.
Exactly. There you go. It's military gay recruitment.
Prince deciding, you know what? I can make a sequel to Purple Rain, Under the Cherry Moon, which everyone hated. You have the surprisingly funny Goldie Hawn football movie, Wildcats, with a young Wesley Snipes. You've got Youngblood with Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze, but no one cares about any of that. We're going to talk about the genre films. We've already mentioned like Big Trouble in Little China and things like that, but you also had April Fool's Day. Ironically enough, coming out after the slasher boom, April Fool's Day honestly is one of the most clever slasher films. April Fool's Day is the film Scream thought it was.
Oh, big time. April Fool's Day is incredibly clever. Not to throw out a spoiler alert, you know, for a, you know, what, 20, 30-year-old movie or
30-year-old movie.
But, I mean, I'm still not going to spoil it, but I'm just going to say that one of the very few times where there is a twist and you never, ever see it coming. It's genuine. It's handled incredibly well. And you don't feel cheated.
But you know what the sick thing is? Go read reviews at the time for why it bombed. They considered that ending a cop-out.
Mm-hmm. But that was the whole crux of the movie, was the twist.
Yeah, well, it was a cop-out to 1986 critics.
Well, critics also hated, 82 critics hated The Thing, so what do they know?
I'm not the biggest fan of it. I kind of agree with the cop-out thing. I feel like the characters didn't really have enough depth to justify this as like a satire. It should have just been an actual slasher movie.
You also had Chopping Mall, which was a satire and an actual slasher movie.
Oh, God, I love that movie. Robots that were created to, like, protect a shopping mall, and they go haywire and start going after these kids that are, like, partying in the mall, and there's a ridiculously awesome head explosion, and it was directed by a guy who I believe went on to, like, direct porn.
I thought that was a Jim Wynorski.
Yeah, Jim Wynorski's, like, well, he does softcore porn. He doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
But he's also done a lot of Roger Corman movies, too.
Oh, he's done tons of Corman movies. Actually, yeah. Some of the best
this Corman. This was actually a Corman-produced film.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Like, you'll notice in the video store, they go into the video store at one point, every poster is from an early 80s Roger Corman flick. Forbidden World and Galaxy of Terror and all that.
I've always loved seeing that in movies and stuff like that. Like when you see a theater or like they're in a video store and you kind of get a glimpse into who or like what the production company is or who's like backing it. And you'll always see their movies, which I always thought was really cool. And yeah, Chopping Mall is really awesome. And I think actually one of the first reviews of Cecil's that I saw as well. Yeah, I think you did that one way back in the day.
That was my second ever video. Barbara Crampton,
Dick Miller as the janitor.
Dick Miller as the janitor.
Yeah.
The Killbots themselves, because, I mean, originally the movie was Killbots, and they released it, and nobody went to see it, and then they re-released it as Chopping Mall, and it ended
Actually,
up
Chopping Mall is a better title.
Chopping Mall is a way better title. It's funny, it's a very good spoof on the whole thing. You've got, Kelly Maroney ends up being like the, you know, she's the real shy, quiet girl, but she ends up being the badass hero.
That's two movies in a row where she gets to pack an Uzi.
Yeah, you know. My dad would have given us Uzis. She just is terrific in that, and it's getting a Blu-ray release like any day now, which is very cool. They're I think Lionsgate resurrected Vestron Video, and so they're re-releasing a lot of the old Vestron movies they're putting out, and they're even putting them on Blu-ray with like the Vestron label on it. So it's very cool.
Oh, man. Lionsgate, if you're listening, please. A Blu-ray release of Hider in the House from Vestron Video. It is the greatest f***ing Gary Busey movie ever made. He hides in an attic and watches a family. I want Gary Busey on the commentary track because that would just make it just all the more great as him talking about doing that. Because to me, that movie's
a documentary. He probably didn't even know he was being filmed.
Yeah, it's a documentary. It's just a movie about Gary Busey's everyday life.
I'm going to pull your endocrine system out of your body.
Okay, well, in 1986, we also got Troma is going full force now. Class of Nuke 'Em High.
Yeah.
Which, you know what? This might be sacrilege. I like Class of Nuke 'Em High better than Toxic Avenger. I'm sorry.
I don't give a wet fart what you think.
Nuke 'Em High is just such a cool little movie. It's very punk rock, very dirty, yet very colorful. I love all the costume designs and stuff. It's a really fun movie, and I do think it's obviously love Toxic Avenger. That's what got me into Troma, but there's just a magic to Class of Nuke 'Em High that I feel like they weren't able to really replicate with any of their other movies. Like, that to me is a real Troma classic. I've loved that one. I'm always going to love that one.
It's tough for me. I would say, I mean, Class of Nuke 'Em High is definitely one of my favorite Troma movies, but Toxic Avenger 2 is the Troma movie that I like over Toxic Avenger 1. So, I've been meaning to do like a whole Troma video, but, cause I freaking love Troma. But yeah,
you could actually, you know what, if you'd pay for his airfare, you could actually get Lloyd to do it with you.
Oh, I'm sure.
We've also got, Deadly Friend and Short Circuit in the same year. Which one came first out of those two? I can never remember.
Short Circuit actually came out.
So Deadly Friend would definitely.
Deadly Friend might have been made first, but as we discussed on the Wes Craven retrospective,
yeah,
it's not a very good movie.
Well, it's the same year though with a similar concept with like the little cute robot kind of thing. And I like Deadly Friend. And
I like Deadly Friend too.
It's a cool one where you've got like the kind of cutesy little robot that sort of goes on a rampage. Although
he throws
got one
a basketball at Throw Mama from the Train's head.
Yeah, he fist to the North Stars that bitch. It's amazing.
Well, in this year, we also have From Beyond, which is one of the most viscerally mind f***y amazing Stuart Gordon movies out there. And we
I just wanted to throw it out there because I just watched From Beyond the first time with my girlfriend a couple weeks back, and her first impression, just talking overall about the special effects, the special effects are so gross.
They're supposed to be.
Exactly. It's a compliment to the movie. Like, she's acknowledging it's really like visceral, nasty, slimy movie. And I do think out of
Barbara Crampton is so freaking hot in that S&M gear.
Out of like Stuart Gordon's Lovecraftian stuff, I would consider From Beyond to be his best work. I really love that one. It's such a cool concept because it's like a continuation of the short story.
Yeah, I mean, where else are you going to see Jeffrey Combs with a penis growing out of the middle of his head?
It's a pineal gland. A pineal. It's not
it's a penis.
Penis.
It's got a big head and a long shaft. It's a penis.
a lot of homosexual undertones in the 1986. We got Top Gun, we got Cobra, and we got From Beyond.
Peter, I'm disappointed you didn't bring up Paco Kurek. This is Hands of Steel's year, man.
Oh, it is. Oh my God. Probably because I talk about this movie so much on the show. It's Hands of Steel, Sergio Martino's Hands of Steel, which is a fantastic exploitation, rip-off exploitation
George
movie.
Eastman arm wrestling over rattlesnakes.
George Eastman is the strongest Raul Morales, the truck driving arm wrestling champion. This movie proceeded over the top, which is funny because you've got Daniel Green in it, who is a very like Sylvester Stallone type in terms of like ripoff action heroes, like Z-grade guys, like Red Brown's obviously kind of the Schwarzenegger. And then I've always kind of seen Daniel Green as sort of the Stallone type. So it's kind of weird to see him in this movie that's got the arm wrestling truck drivers and a big bald arm wrestling champion, much like the one in Over the Top, and there's truck drivers and stuff, but this preceded it, but it's also a Terminator knockoff. I really love this one a lot. It's got a great, it's the dude, who does the, he's in, Goblin. It's one of their synthesizers. I forget exactly what his name was. Cause he's done like solo work as well. He also did the movie, the music for Diodato's Cut and Run. His name is escaping me though, but it's a great, synthwave
Simonetti?
Soundtrack. Simonetti, Claudio Simonetti. That's it. That's the one I was trying to remember. It's just such
a
memorable.
As soon as you said Cut and Run, I love his score on that.
Yeah.
As soon as you talked about Cut and Run, I'm like, okay, you're talking about Simonetti.
Yeah. And he had a just as awesome, synthwave score for Hands of Steel. Such a memorable. I've been trying to find the soundtrack for this movie for the longest time because I've been wanting to hear an actual, like, clear version of the, I just call it the Paco theme, where every time he shows up, it's just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, bam! It's just a theme of the film, that song, because I guess Claudio thought it was so cool, or Sergio Martino thought it was, like, the best thing ever, that they just had to keep using it, that, or they just didn't have enough money to pay Claudio or something, but they keep using that song, and it's fantastic, and I love Hands of Steel, or Arms of Steel, or Fists of Steel, or Atomic Cyborg, one of the other millions of alternate titles that the film has, but it's probably my favorite exploitation movie of all time. And those that haven't seen it, please go see it. It's Terminator with arm wrestling cyborg assassin robots and George Eastman with
the global warming subplot.
The whole global warming thing. Yes, it's phenomenal. And you got John Saxon with a giant laser gun. You really can't miss.
And then you've got like The Hitcher, which I didn't necessarily like. You have the first House movie, which I don't want to talk about because next month we're doing a whole retrospective on that. You have the Invaders from Mars remake, which we've talked about in a previous episode. The Little Shop of Horrors remake, which I think is way better than the original. You've got, shut up, Cecil, Neon Maniacs came out this year.
Neon Maniacs is one of the few movies where I really, really would love a remake done like with the original ideas intact, to be able to complete the story that they couldn't do because they just didn't have the money, but do, you know, the costume designs, like the concept, everything was on point. They just ran out of money and they had to kind of make it up as they went along in order to afford an ending.
You also have Fred Dekker's Night of the Creeps, Sorority House Massacre, The Interesting Spookies. You got Terror Vision, Trick or Treat, Troll, The Amazing Vamp. You got Witchboard from Kevin Tinney, Tia Carrere, Adam West, and Thor in Zombie Nightmare.
Yeah.
John Michael Thor, yes. Night of the Creeps is amazing. Spookies has a brilliant behind the scenes story about how they shot two different movies.
It's better than the movie.
Well, that's because there's two movies. They shot two movies. Both movies ran out of money, so they managed to edit together the two movies to make one Franken film. Witchboard is, like, it's one of the few Ouija board movies that doesn't really scare me because it's not really so much about the Ouija board once, they get past that part. Vamp is hilarious. You've got Grace Jones playing like sexy again.
Dee Dee Pfeiffer, so cute.
Dee Dee Pfeiffer was very cute. That's another one. I think that's another Vestron one that's getting released.
Well, and then this year also had its fair share of sequels as well. You've got Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, which we talked about in a previous episode. You got Psycho 3, which we talked about in a previous episode.
Underrated, and a great movie. Really good.
It's a great movie. Jeff Fahey almost outsleazes Norman Bunce from the second film.
Yep.
You got Friday the 13th Part 6. arguably the best of the Friday the 13th. You've got
one of the best for sure.
You've got Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which we've talked about in a previous episode. Mm-hmm. You got Demons 2, which is not as good as Demons 1. I like the first film better, sorry. And then you've got not a sequel, but David Cronenberg's remake of The Fly, which I like David Cronenberg. Just for something about that movie just doesn't do a damn thing for me.
Blasphemy!
I'm sorry. I know Cecil loves it too, but I just don't like it. It's not a bad movie. If you like it, like it. I just don't.
Oh, you don't like what's wrong with you?
I just never got into that one. I'm sorry.
Oh, Jeff Goldblum is watching you poop.
We've got the three films that are probably going to be most remembered for this year. You've got Blue Velvet from David Lynch, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer by John McNaughton, and the film most people haven't seen because you could only see it at a ride, Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas's Captain EO.
Oh, God.
Forgot about that one, didn't you? Michael Jackson as a space captain battling Angelica Houston.
The wizardry of Lucas. The mastery of Coppola. The phenomenal music and dance of Michael Jackson. Captain EO. In spectacular 3D. Now playing at Disneyland and Walt Disney World and nowhere else in the universe.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's real.
I've only ever seen clips of it.
I actually own the work print.
Oh, jeez.
I haven't seen the Captain EO thing, but Blue Velvet and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer are two of my favorite, like, just beyond f***ed up movies that I've ever seen in my life. With Blue Velvet, it's a David Lynch movie. Obviously, you're going to expect it to get kind of weird, but this one gets very weird. Like, it takes your typical sort of noir detective sort of story and spins it just right onto its head. You've got Dennis Hopper playing one of the most insane characters, I think, in cinema history. Oh, fuck anything that moves! But there's the whole speculation that, like, Kyle MacLachlan's character, there's, like, the speculation that there's the scene, you know, where they have him kind of kidnapped in the car, out in the junkyard or whatever, and then he's kind of, like, walking home and limping and stuff, and, you know, he's kissing him before they're starting stuff. There's a speculation that, like, Kyle MacLachlan's character gets raped by Dennis Hopper and all this stuff, like, cause it does kind of play, like, ambiguously, and you wouldn't be surprised if Hopper's character did that, cause he was a crazy fucker. Like I don't think it really mattered to him. It was all a power play sort of thing. Just all the general weirdness of that one. And then you got a movie like Henry, which, oh my God, that's easily one of the most like psychological and like physically hard to watch films. Like, it leaves you with
the videotape scene is so hard to sit through.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, that whole movie it's another one of those, just like Platoon, that I can watch it maybe every 1 or 2 years or something. Like, I'll go back to it because I love it as a film. I think it's really incredibly well written, and Michael Rooker just has to be the standout performance of his career, I'd say.
Do you know how Michael Rooker got cast in that movie? They couldn't figure out an actor to play Henry. Michael Rooker worked for FedEx at the time, and he was the FedEx delivery boy who delivered the script from the studio to John McNaughton after he sent it back. And all he said when he saw Rooker was, standing at his door, was, "Oh God, tell me you can act."
Are you serious? So this was like Rooker's first movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that's impressive.
That's how he was cast. He happened to deliver the script to John McNaughton.
And then he delivered a hell of a performance, probably the performance of his career. I don't think he's done anything better than Henry. I mean, he's been in good movies, but as far as like performance-wise, this has to be his best movie. And I'm actually utterly stunned that that's his first film. And just going back to the whole watching it once every year or two or three or whatever, it's because it leaves you, it's a great movie.
It's a dirty, but it leaves you feeling dirty.
You feel dirty and empty and just like you've done something bad watching it. Like, it's one of those movies where, like, if somebody walks in the room and you're watching it, you turn it off. It's like, what were you doing? Watching porn? It's like, you don't even want to admit that you're watching Henry.
Well,
it's like,
the movie is supposedly based on the real life serial killer Henry Lee Lucas.
Loosely based.
Well, the police have a lot of doubts about, this is his version of events, and they have a lot of doubts about how much it actually happened. So that's why allegedly
it's a lot
based
like,
on Henry Lee Lucas.
A lot like with Gene, the Ed Gein where we don't actually know how many people he really killed or what he really did. All we know about was the state his house was found in and whatnot. So there's only the speculation and the claims that the actual killer or whatever has made. But Henry is just one of those, like, I would consider it in like my, not even top 10, but top three, like, best horror films of all time. Like, this movie still just shakes me to my core when I watch it, and it's why I can only watch it a couple times every few years, because it still leaves me with that lingering feeling. And I like that. I like that I'm not desensitized to it. I like that it still scares me, and it's one that I really recommend to anybody who wants to see just a really f***ed up movie, and everything is like not freaking you out anymore, and you need something to really shake. This one's gonna shake you up.
Blue Velvet is I'd throw that classic line out there, but it's got the F-bomb in it, so I'll let it go. And Henry's Portrait of a Serial Killer is just a very messed up, weird-ass movie.
And Tom Tolles is fantastic as Otis as well. But we have to talk about the top box office. This is one of the first years we've done this. I only really don't like two of the films, and one of them I kind of do. The top grossing box office films for 1986 were Top Gun, which, as I pointed out, I don't really like, Crocodile Dundee, Platoon, Karate Kid Part 2, highly enjoyable, surprisingly, Star Trek IV The Voyage Home, with $109 million, Back to School.
Is that the whale one?
That's the whale one. You got Back to School, which, as much as we were praising it, I'd forgotten was a box office hit. You've got Aliens, you got The Golden Child, which, okay, I love this movie. I don't care if Eddie Murphy hates this movie. The Golden Child is fantastic. Shut the hell up, Eddie Murphy. You made Daddy Daycare. You don't get to talk about bad movies anymore.
I want the idol.
The knife. Please. I want the knife.
That's it. I want the knife. Please.
My dear sweet brother Noomsy.
Brother Noomsy.
And then you got Ruthless People, which is it's a funnier film than it should be. And then, as I said, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ferris Bueller is a narcissistic sociopath, and you kind of realize you're following the villain throughout the whole movie, which I don't like.
Why do you like Henry? Why do you like Henry then?
Because he doesn't pretend he's the good guy.
Good point.
He was all Ferris did. He didn't feel like he was just shirking responsibility. I can identify with that.
Well, but then we've got the Golden Raspberries. Cecil, hold your water until I finish them all. Worst Picture was a tie between Howard the Duck and Under a Cherry Moon. Worst Director was Prince. Worst Actor was Prince. Worst Actress, Madonna for Shanghai Surprise, and she is pretty bad in that. Worst Supporting Actor, Jerome Benton, Under the Cherry Moon. Worst Supporting Actress, yes, I'm serious, Dom DeLuise in Haunted Honeymoon, because remember, he's playing a woman in that. And Worst Screenplay, yeah. Howard the Duck. All right, Cecil, go.
I know we're running out of time. I'll just say that they're all wrong. Well, when they're talking about Howard the Duck, they're wrong.
Whatever. This is the same year that Labyrinth came out, and they're not even going to mention that.
Labyrinth was a huge critical and financial success.
Which is so weird to me. I love it, but to me it stands in like, if that was critically and financially successful, like, Big Trouble in Little China should have won some awards too. It's on the same level, in my opinion. It's the same weird kind of, same with Golden Child.
Big Trouble in Little China bombed.
I know, I don't get it. It's the same type of movie. Same with Golden Child. You can watch those three in succession and have an awesome movie night of just like weird sort of fantasy fair, but like not really. Like they're like those three movies are almost the same thing to me. So it's kind of weird that, that Big Trouble would bomb.
You know, I just want to throw this out there. Totally talking about Big Trouble just reminded me, if you've never seen it, and a lot of people have not, if you love Big Trouble in Little China, there's a movie that also came out in 1986 that got completely buried. Cause if you think Big Trouble in Little China bombed, this movie bombed even worse. It's a movie called Jake Speed.
Jake Speed is fun as hell.
Jake Speed is so much goddamn fun. It's a very pulpy kind of movie, and it does have a total Big Trouble Little China vibe to it. It just has that same just feel. You got the really super cocky villain, or I'm sorry, really super cocky hero, and it's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen it and you love Big Trouble in Little China, definitely track it down and watch it. It is a great time.
I also want to point out is, I want to point out three quick films here. Now, I am not a fan of Jackie Chan, but Armor of God came out this year. I think John Woo's f***ing amazing A Better Tomorrow came out this year. The really strange Fred Olen Ray Armed Response with David Carradine, Lee Van Cleef, and Michael Berryman. If you haven't seen Armed Response, you need to. So, all that said, Cecil, how old were you in 1986?
I was young.
That's it?
Yes.
Where can we find you?
Not getting an age out of me, fucko.
I actually know your real age. I just won't say it on the air.
You can find me at escapistmagazine.com, goodbadflix.com. You can find me at YouTube at goodbadflix, as well as goodbadflix on Facebook and Twitter.
And not Instagram.
And not Instagram. Yes, there's still fighting over that.
Peter, where can people find you? Because I believe you weren't even born yet, were you?
No, I was still swimming around in my daddy's balls in 1986. But you can find me talking about movies and stuff on Twitter at Cinematica, on YouTube the Cinemasochist, Facebook the Cinemasochist, 1201beyond.com, and the Grindhouse channel.
You can find me at 1201beyond.com. Contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. I am also at thegrindhousechannel.com. So guys, 1986 was an eclectic year, as this is the most 80s year we've done so far. Guys, try to be a cut above, keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. Have a good night.
Relax. You're quite safe here.
Am I dreaming?
No.
Where am I? In bed? What am I doing? Talking to myself.
Look, I must have a star on my door.
Or better still.
A door.
Swing doors, huh? Look,
okay, doors. Swing. On the window. One, two, three, sleep. Poetry. That'll work. Come, sweet slumber, and shroud me in thy purple cloak. Doesn't even rhyme. Is that Mike T's name?
Paranoid.
I can't stand T.
Trust me.
Radiodrome is a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.